This is RSVNB Update, episode 591, recorded Thursday, October 27th, 2016, early onset RuneScape dementia. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for RSBNB Update. This week, in addition to the lovely and co-host that you guys enjoy hearing every week, is Mr. Bistro and Shane. We're here, as per usual.
Mm-hmm.
And also joining us is someone who has been on the podcast before, and, well, some of the co-hosts refer to his status as legendary. That is King Kala, a.k.a. Patrick. Welcome back to the show.
Good to be back.
Yeah, Patrick is the one. Once upon a time, we did an April Fool's joke on RSBNB, where on April 1st, we had the members who had posted their pictures in the non-RS media forum. Everyone was posting pictures of themselves back then because phone cameras were becoming a thing, so everyone was taking the famous bathroom selfie before Apple pioneered the front-facing camera on their phones. But anyways, that's beside the point.
Very much besides the point, as it was taken with a webcam, which was also starting to be in vogue at the time.
Yeah, but lots of people were posting photos of themselves on RSBNB, so we thought it'd be funny. Oh, let's do a little April Fool's Day thing where we say, today, X person is the featured member of RSBNB and post a picture of them on the front page. But the joke was that only the person who posted the picture could see that photo of themselves. And that sent Patrick for quite a fright, and it made him fall off a chair and hit his head.
Yep. Back when I was much younger and much less wise than I am now. God, that would have been, what, 10 years ago? 11 years ago, almost?
I don't even know. But
Our memory is fading us as in our old age, right?
Yeah, and that's what I said last week. It felt like sometimes I'm getting RuneScape dementia where I can't remember the basic facts of things in-game. But
well, as long as you can remember how to spell it, that's good, right? Because all you need to know is RuneScape and then just add .com at the end, right?
Yeah. All right, so let's dive into this week's Halloween event. Halloween is always an interesting part of the year, seeing what they do and what they want to convey. Always a spooky kind of tone to it. This year's is called Invention of Disaster, taking place in the alternate universe that the 200th quest, Dimension of Disaster, took place in. This is entirely free to play, so that means, of course, that King Kala Patrick here can log in to do it. There's no items or gear, and there's a few little complications along the way. So, Mr. Bistro, what did you think of this use of the alternate universe NRS for this Halloween event?
It was interesting, but I don't think it was entirely necessary. I don't know. I think moving it into the Dimension of Disaster just kind of set a good theme for Halloween. But I think that's the only reason they did it.
Yeah. And I mean, I think a really good thing that comes from this is that eventually that is a signal that there will be other things taking place in the Dimension of Disaster universe that might be more consequential than a Halloween event, right? So that's a positive I took from this. This takes around 25 minutes to do, I think. I think that's a fair amount of time, right?
It took me a little bit longer, but yeah, around there.
Okay. Yeah. I just rounded down a bit. It actually took me 32 minutes to do just because of how things are set up. Mm-hmm. But rounding down and, you know, removing the gaps I took trying to figure things out, that was definitely something that I was able to split apart and do. And, you know, there's four rooms to it, and I have to say this first part felt kind of mundane.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, these were practically AFK-able, right?
Yeah, they were. I appreciated the colors, though.
The colors?
The colors.
What do you mean?
The Halloween events always have the nice spooky colors.
Like, yeah.
The Halloween colors.
Purpley. Purpley and stuff.
Purple? Is that a traditional Halloween color?
It's become one, and I'm happy about it.
Yeah, it's definitely something in RS, I think. Probably going back to the Draenor Mansion event way back when. But, you know, I think a interesting thing about this is that if you look at last year's Christmas event, you can kind of find some parallels, but we'll get there in just a bit. So the first part of the room is body parts sorting. There's a light shining down from the ceiling, and you need to sort out the body parts from that hopper at that specific time. And you basically just click on each hopper, and then you'll get notifications at various percentage points along the way. And this gives cooking experience, believe it or not. Sorting through body parts is going to give you cooking experience. So you basically have your player doing this furious, fast and furious thing with his hands, and oh boy, oh boy, oh boy. He's sorting through all these body parts, putting them into the grinding hopper, and away they go. So definitely a macabre theme with this one. A little bit odd that it gives cooking experience, but once again, very AFK-able, I think. And I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but we'll save judgment for the end. Room two basically has you riding a bicycle to move a conveyor belt along, and that's all room two is. And it's very much like the Heffen agility post. You're given a notification as to what speed you ought to be pedaling at to be successful. Then you just select and go from there, and then you know, adjust it, and then you make progress. Very simple. Room three is where it gets interesting with something called divine entanglement for all you physics people out there. Basically, there's four types of energy in the alternate universe: Armadyl, Bando, Ceridoman, and Zamorak, which are, of course, labeled differently. Good, bad, lawful, and chaos. And you basically need to just keep those taps turned on. And if too much pressure builds up in the pipes, you got to release the pressure. And that's all there is to room three. And any guesses, Patrick, on what kind of XP that gives?
I don't know. Trying to sort of that stuff. Wouldn't it be agility?
Nope. Room three is indeed smithing experience.
Smithing?
Yes.
Yeah.
For driving in a conveyor belt with a bicycle.
No, no. Oh, that's fire making.
Oh, okay. You're confusing me. This is such a simple thing.
But the experiences don't make sense, do they? I mean, no. Fire making XP for riding a bicycle?
Well, it is an alternate dimension.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough.
Riding
a bicycle is how you start fires in this dimension.
All right. Well, room three definitely gives you a smithing experience. And then room four, perhaps the room that is easiest to make sense of, involves charging a generator with static electricity on a carpet. I guess we'll just get this out of the way. This gives crafting experience, which is interesting. Oh.
You know, I bet farming's alternate experience method is doing dungeoneering.
Don't go there. Don't go there. Don't go there. I beg you to not go there.
Commandment one of Shane, thou shalt not insult farming.
But this one is very similar to last Christmas's event on the ice rink, where you skate around the ice rink to and avoid the obstacles. It's exactly the same as that, except here you're... I'm not even sure what the little blobs of things you are.
They're avoiding. Simple parts.
Oh, simple parts. All right. So basically, you avoid those, and then after each of these steps, you head back and talk to the guy in the main invention guild, Dr. Finkenbrain, I believe his name is. And then following from that, you realize that, oh no, you have created a god construct. Now, where does this sound familiar from, Mr. Bistro?
Who created a god construct? I don't know.
Wasn't this the same kind of thing on that Telos was based on? Being based off anima and energy and everything like that?
Well, maybe, but no, I thought Telos was just guarding the heart of protecting the anima of Gielinor. God, why am I arguing this?
I don't know. It's something you do on this podcast.
I don't think that that's related. I think it's more like building the golem in the desert.
Okay. Kind of okay, that's a fair analogy, definitely. So you realize that, oh no, you've created this horrible monster down below, and oh, it has 99,000 life points if you're maxed in constitution, but only combat level 1. What are we to do? You can't use traditional weapons against it. You can't use food to fight it. This part made me shake my head. You know, as much as I enjoyed the unique aspect of this fight of, you know, using the little zappers that are in place on the wall to hurt the creature, it took too long to kill it, and it was very tedious. And, you know, I hate to bring it back to this, but it's got to come back to the RuneScape in-game tick rate. And, I mean, that's the number one thing I hate doing in-game is running around trying to avoid certain obstacles because Jagex says that I should.
Yeah, and I didn't have a problem just soaking the damage from this thing. I was able to just keep running around.
Oh, okay. See, I didn't bring food.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, in the post, it said that deaths are safe deaths, but they're still annoying, so I brought food anyway.
Oh, yeah, right. So bringing a little food might indeed be a good idea. Fair enough, then. Fair enough. So basically, you just keep running around, take this thing's life points all the way down, and then after you end up killing it, mini quest complete. There's a few special attacks along the way that do various things. I don't even think I got hit by all of them on my first go through it, so I can't even speak to what the various attacks did. But suffice to say, if you just run around and try to avoid everything, you'll be just fine. But yeah, following that, the quest is complete, and there are a few additional things that you can do, for example, after the quest that involve the reward store. But before we get to that, what did you think of this compared to past Halloween events? Without going too much into past events, of course, we'll save that for later.
I didn't really care for it. I still think that my favorite Halloween event was that spiderweb-themed one. Where you got the spider web cloak.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, this felt relatively simple, and that's okay for a Halloween event. It's definitely not going to be up on my list of favorites. So I think I'm going to probably have to give this event in total, you know, just a 2 or a 3. Probably a 2. Well, no, I don't think I can go for 2. That says a lot about something being bad, so we'll just go for a 3 on that. Out of 5. So, Patrick, based on what we've said so far, what does this make you think about in terms of JX's current strategy with holiday events?
Well, with holiday events, I think you want to make them simple enough that everyone can do them, but you also want to make them interesting enough that people will actually want to do them. I mean, the question I have is, was it humorous in any way, or was it funny? Were there lots of references to like Halloween tropes? And was the reward worth it? And basically, if it's no to all of that, then I don't know, back to the drawing board for Christmas, I guess.
Well, the thing is with the rewards, you actually need to repeat the event to unlock more rewards.
Oh, so if it's tedious, then...
Yeah, because, I mean, right now, I believe at the end of this, you end up with, what is it, 200 gray matter, something like that, or maybe it's 100, I don't exactly remember the number. But
I wonder if they took gray matter from Breaking Bad.
Maybe. So, I assume that's one of your favorite television shows?
Was back in the day, just like a lot of people.
Okay, but, I never watched that one.
It was pretty popular. Never saw it myself, but a lot of people.
Grey Matter was the company that Heisenberg kind of gave up on. And always regretted doing so because it made so much money.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well,
they could also just refer to simply to brains and, you know, have them zombies like brains. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Dr. Frankenstein, that's obviously Frankenstein and the Frankenstein's monster. So it's just going on the old Halloween references there, I guess.
Yeah. Okay. I'm guessing I got 65 gray matter then for the first completion, or maybe just 50, though maybe I was seeing things wrong. Though that could be the case, because you do get additional gray matter for each time you complete it. So this brings us to the...
It actually says you get 50 for the first daily completion and then 15 for every subsequent completion, according to the reward thing on the wiki I found.
Yeah, I might have to have a look at that because I'm drawing a blank at how much I had. I swear I was able to buy things, but the cheapest thing in the store was 100 gray matter, so I'm not sure exactly where that came from. But in any case, there is a huge reward table associated with this here, and ultimately you're going to want to come back to this if you're at all interested in completing this event to its fullest. So things you can purchase are a lightning rod hat, the Mad Professor title, Dr. Spider MD pet, which requires you to find 8 spider legs in the Invention of Disaster realm, the Ectoplasmator, which you can purchase if you didn't get in the previous year's events, as well as the deployable herb burner, which came from last year's Halloween event in Nomad's Underworld. Then finally, some XP lamps are also available to you. So that means this year we have the new reward of being the spider pet, the Mad Professor title, and a lightning rod hat. So
that Dr. Spider MD is clearly a house reference. You know, the TV show, they call him Dr. House MD, but the house spider is an actual type of spider. So that's a neat little reference they put in there.
Okay. How do you know these things?
I read.
Oh, okay. And I guess you probably watch these TV shows too then.
Some of them.
All right.
You have to remember, I'm not as bad as most people.
That's right. That's right. Patrick is not as bad as most people with technology. Mm-hmm. More on that at some other point if he ever chooses to enlighten us on that or enlighten the listeners. But
it's Shane's favorite compliment to me. That's all.
Yeah. It came out wrong, but I meant to say he was pretty good, but you know, not as good as some
people. Many things you say do. It came out wrong.
Well, it doesn't really happen on the podcast. Too. It doesn't really happen on the podcast, does it? Does it, Mr. Bistro?
Not recently. Maybe just haven't been able to get it out of you.
What was the last thing you remember that came out wrong?
Well, as post-show stuff, and definitely when Reed was on. <There's> no way.
Yeah, well, I was being agitated there.
I would think after 590 some episodes, you'd have enough experience to not mess up, though, right?
That's right. It has gotten a lot better in that regard. So, anyways, folks, there's your Halloween 2016 event. Repeatable. This will be disappearing from game on November 7th, so you got a week and a bit left to complete this as many times as you want in order to get the things. It's not too tedious as years pass, and it doesn't require community participation, which is either a good thing or a bad thing, depending on how you look at community participation. But, you know, I think it's, you know, fairly typical for a Halloween event. And I want to say that even though the boss fight was tedious, I feel that the boss fight redeemed itself for the first half of the event. Because I found the first half of the event really bland, flat, and, you know, just the fact you could AFK it really, you know, didn't have me too excited about it. But then we got to the boss fight, and then, oh, I'm like, okay, this is a really interesting boss mechanic. But you know, at the end of the day, it was still tedious to run around and avoid these things. So I give Jagex good marks for effort on the boss fight. Any other closing statements on the Halloween event before we move on, Mr. Bistro or Mr. Patrick Kingcala?
I think I'm good.
I'm good, too.
Sounds interesting.
All right, fair enough, then. We will move straight on to the patch notes for this week. A number of interesting things on the list here. You guys just feel free to jump in at any time if there's any that I missed or anything else you've noticed that didn't make it in. But the aggression, luck, and camouflage potions will now correctly share their effects in Social Slayer. So that if you're doing Social Slayer with someone, you can share these benefits with everyone, which kind of makes sense being Social Slayer. Mm-hmm. Did you find any use for these potions, Mr. Bistro, at all?
No.
Yeah. I know luck, I guess, if you're wanting to use a combat ring, but you want the Ring of Wealth effect, that's good. Aggression potions reportedly are good for people who like AFKing at creatures just to keep the aggro up so they don't need to run around and try and make things aggressive again. I'm not sure exactly what use camouflage potions would have in Social Slayer unless you're doing Slayer in the Wilderness. So that's a question mark for me. Following from that, seashells are now stackable. Tang, the food merchant on Waiko, will now buy non-sliced washrooms. Players can now access the Gnome Glider network from the Twilight Gnome Colony after rescuing Azalea Oakheart. You guys, Azalea. What?
Azalea.
What did I say?
Azalea, yeah. Or something like that. It's a type of flower as well, which works with Oakheart, right?
All right.
It's almost like flowers.
Azalea Oakheart is kind of related to Amelia Earhart when you think of it, being a glider lost somewhere, or, well, not a glider, but a pilot lost somewhere out in the middle of nowhere in a series of islands. So, you know, this is great to have a use for a way of getting back to the mainland from the Gnome Islands. Unfortunately, I haven't found Ms. Oakheart yet, so I'm not sure if we can use the Gnome Glider Network to get to the Ark from the regular Gnome Glider Network. But I think that would be a great thing to add in if that was actually possible. So if that's not the case, let's lobby Jagex for that. You guys agree with that, or do you guys think that's not needed?
I agree.
All right. Yeah.
More mobility is always a good thing, isn't it?
Yeah, and I mean, who... I have to ask this question, and it's not, you know, to shame certain parts of updates or whatever, but how many people out there use the Gnome Glider in day-to-day transit? Now, when you have so many free teleports, lodestones and whatnot, and teleport items.
I used to, but just there isn't a need for it anymore.
Yeah, it used to be really good for... actually, I take that back. It still is pretty good for the full farming runs to get from the Gnome Village to the Gnome Stronghold, which, of course, the Gnome Stronghold has the wood and the fruit trees, whereas the other one only has the fruit tree. And you can see the RS early onset RS dementia is setting in here. I can't remember which one is the stronghold and which one is the village. I don't suppose either of you guys know that offhand.
I don't remember either. It's been so long since I did the farming run.
What was the question?
Which one? You can't even remember the question.
What are we talking about?
You're talking about Gnome Village and Gnome Stronghold. Stronghold is north.
Thank you. I had no idea. Like, see, I completely forgot that.
Yeah. It's a stronghold because they're all walking around in armor.
All right.
And when I would do my farming runs, I would always teleport to Varrock, get the trees there, and then I would do the spirit tree in the Grand Exchange to Stronghold, then to the Village, and then I would end up using my Crystal Seed from there. So.
All right. I hope they don't ship us off to an old folks home.
Don't worry, Shane. I won't let that happen to you.
That's good.
Unless it happens to both of us together at the same time. Which
well, it very well could. It very well could. Now here's some changes to the Telos fight. Entering a Telos encounter will now give the ability to fight an extra 5% above highest in rage. This is so players no longer need to perform two kills to get to a new highest in rage level. Mr. Bistro is the combat person. What does this mean for the fight?
It doesn't mean much. they keep adding all these changes, and I guess they stack up after a while, but... yeah, it's more the same right now.
All right. Also, phase indicators have been added to Telos Life Point interface. I guess that's to show how close you are to getting down to the next phase, and you know, to show how long you need to tough out the current phase for would be my guess, seeing as I've never actually fought Telos. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's correct.
All right. Players can once again teleport to the Grand Exchange using Sliskelion pieces from the currency pouch interface, or from the full currency pouch interface. That wasn't working last week, so that's good. That was fixed. Virago's team split colors have been changed to red and blue to improve visibility for colorblind players. You know, this is really a great thing because one of the colorblindness disabilities involves the red-green spectrum, and people who have this are unable to differentiate the difference between different shades of red and green, so that makes it hard for various things to be seen in this Virago interface. So I'm really glad to see this in this update, because there's, you know, so many parts of Quest that we talk about, so many parts of little things that we talk about with Tannis and whatnot in our community as well, about things that could have been improved. So it's really nice to see these in the patch notes. Also, red and green outlines on the Celtic knot puzzles have been amended to more clearly define the correct positions for colorblind players. Another great thing, because they would turn red if they were not right, and then green if you got it in the right spot. So that's excellent. And the spirit gem bag is now kept on death outside of the wilderness. And this was added last week. And the spirit gem bag is basically like a normal gem bag, except it's used for the spirit gems that you use with summoning. So that's all I pulled from the patch notes this week. Anything else jump out at you two?
No, the ninja fixes were really nice. Especially the spirit gem one. I don't know why you wouldn't be keeping that. The first place.
Yeah, and you know, the really unfortunate part is that those of us who already have 99 summoning can't take advantage of this.
You could if you wanted.
I'm not training summoning again. That's one of the most expensive skills in game, and right now it's just a glorified pouch making skill until familiars become more useful. All right.
The only patch note that kind of bounced out at me there, well, that was even remotely funny, because normally there's like two or three that are somewhat humorous. The only thing I noticed was the very first one, actually, was Iron Man legs will no longer stretch when performing certain animations. And just to think of someone jumping over a chasm or something like that, and just the legs just elongating to stretch over it.
Yeah, you know, we used to see a lot more of those back in the olden days of graphical glitches and whatnot. So it's good that these are a rarity now, but it's always funny to imagine what these might look like.
So. Yeah, I remember when they used to clip quite a bit, when your the neck of your character would just like stretch if you're going up somewhere, if you're trying to go up a ladder, yep. And then suddenly your head would appear at the top of the ladder, yep. And the rest of your body's still down at the bottom.
Speaking of clipping, that was indeed actually part of the reason that they undertook the skill cape rework, which Patrick was on the show for last year, didn't give us a clear answer on what should have happened.
Well, clearly they should have just made a decision and gone with it, right? Just like I should have made a decision and gone with it, because I'm still hearing about it so many months later.
Yeah, I never forget. Just like a good owl, I never forget.
Well, you have very much, you really have selective memory, Shane, and that kind of goes in with your early onset RuneScape dementia.
Okay. Well, onto a little bit more of a serious topic. Last week we did mention the fact that elite skilling outfits would be coming into game. And this week they have, actually last week after podcast went to production, revealed the design document for how these skilling outfits are going to work. So basically, this is for the first two, the Gemstone Golem and the Rune Ethereal outfit, and this design will potentially be used for other outfits when they're released. So here's how it goes. So when you reach level 70 in an appropriate skill, so runecrafting, for example, you can speak to the skill master for that skill to learn how to collect the elite outfit fragments, Gemstone Golem fragments, different for each skill. These fragments will be gathered in the currency pouch when you're training that skill through any method. To turn fragments into pieces, you'll need to learn an invention blueprint, have 20 invention for the Gemstone Golem outfit, and 21 invention for the Rune Ethereal outfit, and level 80 in the associated skill. The blueprint will not cost any inspiration. Players with level 99, 120, and with 200 mil XP will receive a better chance at receiving the fragments graded at each level. So the level 120 will receive more fragments than at level 29, than in level 99, etc. What's staying similar to the outfits from Treasure Hunter is the following. The outfit pieces will be one-to-one tradable. The outfit piece you craft will be random to encourage trading. Outfit pieces are reclaimed from Diango, and if you have all three normal outfits, they can be combined into one super outfit. We are currently looking to release this on the 14th of November, though the original plan was to release within 2 weeks. We have taken extra time to get the outfits just right and to make sure it's suitable. So that is how these elite skilling outfits will work that were previously on Treasure Hunter. Thoughts?
Hopefully they look good if they're taking extra time to make them look good.
Oh, they do. Anything that comes out on Treasure Hunter looks good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm kind of curious as to why you need 20 invention for a one outfit and 21 for the other.
Probably,
what's the level difference there?
I mean, it's really insignificant given the fact how quickly you get invention XP in the early levels. So, I mean, I don't see why they have to put that differentiation in there. I guess, if anything, it's just to show that you get one outfit at this level and another outfit at this next level. That would probably be the only reason.
That just bugs me.
All right.
I need consistency.
All right. I personally believe that this is an excellent way of bringing these outfits into game, though, and it really gives a good use for invention and a way of letting people who don't want to spend on Treasure Hunter to achieve these outfits in a somewhat easy way that doesn't require too much grinding, because you're just training the skill along the way. So I'm pretty happy about this, and, you know, this is exactly the kind of interfacing, I guess, or linkage, you could say, that is needed between Treasure Hunter and the actual game, because it means that items in Treasure Hunter should ultimately have a space within the lore of the game, and by putting an item in the invention skill, it is by that point as a part of the lore of the game, because you learn how to create it, even though it's costing you zero inspiration. So I'm really good that kind of signals that, okay, for future outfits like this, Treasure Hunter outfits will indeed have a spot for within the lore of the game, which is pretty good. So I'm happy about that.
Well, I'm not saying that I'm not happy that they're making it possible to get them in game.
I know.
Yeah, I'm glad that that's a thing too.
Yeah. And, I mean, I honestly think that anyone who has been chatting with Jagex about this kind of thing or paying any attention at all to the community will know that this was needed, and it's a great thing to be able to report that it's coming to game, and it's coming quick. It's not something we're waiting, you know, 6 months out for. So that's pretty good as well. All right. I would like to personally see the shark outfit added to the this method as well, with fishing and the thieving outfit. Yes. I think those are two great ones that could be added next in a pair, because those ones are pretty overpowered and it would be nice to have in-game. That's what I'm hoping for next. Shark one. Yeah, yeah. I also do have an update on Bounty Hunter. Bounty Hunter was supposed to come out in October. Previously was supposed to come out in September. but Bounty Hunter has been pushed back again. It's only been pushed back to November 14th, though, so we should be talking about that in 2 weeks, hopefully. Or 3 weeks, I guess. So, you know, all I'm going to say about this is that we can't judge Bounty Hunter before it's released, and yeah. I would rather they take the time to get it right on the first go than to release it and need to make the week following it be dedicated to fixing it. So just take your time, Jagex. Take your time, get the update right, make sure it's nicely polished, and then release it to us. That's my stance on this.
That's what that old saying is, right? A delayed game is eventually good, but a rushed game is bad forever.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And, I mean, there's no point in rushing unless you're specifically going for a deadline. But if it's not going to be playable content, there's no point in putting this content in the game that's horribly broken. So. Mm-hmm. All right. So, as with any week, we also have a Treasure Hunter promotion this week, and it is Halloween-themed, so it's called Walk Like a Zombie. Yeah, this basically follows the Death Lotus training event where you get a scorecard, and then you have to perform various tasks in-game, or you can skip certain tasks if you receive the tokens on Treasure Hunter, and then after you do your entire card for the first time, you will get one piece of the outfit. So this basically means that you need to complete your zombie card 5 times in order to get your outfit. I don't know if that's something people want to do this weekend, because this is a weekend event, so it is going to be limited in terms of how long it's in game. So it's up to you if you want to spend your weekend grinding for this. I personally do not, so I'm ignoring this promotion.
I wouldn't either. There's already a zombie outfit.
Oh, yeah.
Granted, it's old.
Yeah, I think I've got it.
Yeah, and like if you have it, that definitely says something. So,
sure does.
The zombie outfit deserves a special mention, as it comes with an ability that allows you to bite other players via a right-click option, giving your victim a temporary zombification with an appropriately shambling gait. What's a gait?
That's how you walk.
Oh, okay.
How you carry yourself. I think that's what a gait is.
All right, fair enough.
It's also used for, like, pathways for fences and whatnot. Gates.
Mm, yes, yes. I'm aware of that. But this was spelled G-A-I-T.
Homonyms.
Yeah, we can talk a lot about those, but this is not the podcast for that.
No.
But yeah, this is available from the 27th through Monday the 31st. And if you have any tokens left over after the weekend, you'll have until November 14th to use them. So it's also worth noting that in addition to completing the card and getting the outfit piece, you can also complete various rows or columns for each time. So the first time you complete a row or column, you receive a piece of the zombie outfit with special bite. Oh, okay. So apparently you only need to do it the first time then. It's to get the... I see. It's the walk like a zombie animation and the override you need to do for the card. Okay, that makes sense. So you only need to get the zombie outfit by completing a row or a column on the first go. So that's not too bad if you just want the outfit, I guess. And the ability to bite people. But completing the card the second time also gives you an XP and coin item. The third time is the second tier zombie outfit cosmetic upgrade. Apparently it looks more neurotic. It also gives...
necrotic, Shane.
Oh,
neurotic is something else.
Also gives you the same XP coin item, and same for the fourth. And then the third tier improves the zombie cosmetic upgrade, looks at even more necrotic and XP and coin items as well. Yeah, that was just a misread on my part. So, anyways. Moving on.
Are you trying to tell us something, Shane?
No, not at all.
He's trying to tell us that his dementia is making him neurotic.
Ay, ay, ay. So, you know what's happening in 2 months' time? It's going to be Christmas time in less than 2 months. So, the Christmas jumper is on sale. You can pre-order it. There's going to be limited stock. You just go to the RuneScape merchandise store and you can pre-order. And there is a photo on the news posting here of how this looks if you need help in making your decision.
What? The models look so pleased to be wearing those Christmas sweaters.
Well, no, you know, I mean, it's the typical hideous Christmas sweater, right? Uh-huh. Except it's got,
as they say, it's sure to keep you snugly as the nights draw in.
Oh boy, it's got a whole bunch of various RuneScape symbols on it, and you know, aside from the god symbols, I think if you were to wear this, no one would know it's for RuneScape unless they were a RuneScape player, which, I mean, that's either a benefit or a drawback based on how you look at
things. They don't show the back.
No, they don't.
On the back, it's probably got a big, giant RS on it.
Now, let's see. View more images. No, the back is the same as the front.
No.
So.
It's limited stock, which means they didn't sell them all last year and they don't know what to do with them.
Yeah, $44.99 Canadian plus shipping. Available in unisex, small, medium, and extra large. So if you're interested in purchasing your yearly Christmas sweater from Jagex, you pre-order that now before Halloween. All right. Well, I believe that means we're wrapping up the RS segment of the show, unless there's anything else you guys would like to mention before we move on to listener questions.
I'm good.
All right. Well, we'll let Patrick read the first question then.
All right. This question is from Sladester 2. Which year was your favorite Halloween event on RuneScape and why? Also, do you look forward to doing holiday events more or less than you used to?
And that was from Boredom, or Sladester 2. I'm not sure which name you would prefer. But
clearly he was bored, so he came up with a second name, right?
Yeah, that's right. My favorite Halloween event on RS was the trick-or-treating around Lumbridge with the zombie head. But close second to that was the event 2 years ago, I believe, where we were ghost busting in Drainer Mansion. So those would be my top two. How about you guys?
That one was 2 years ago?
I think so, yeah.
You're getting old too.
Don't say that.
I think the one that I liked the best was the one where you go into like the Grim Reaper's mansion and you have to, his servant passed away and you have to become his replacement or whatever. And just going around the mansion and using the examine text on everything. It was just, I just remember being very funny.
I don't remember that one.
2007.
Oh boy, that was a long time ago. Okay.
Release of Citadels. Is that it?
I can't remember. I don't think so, though.
The first
one I remember is the Scythe, and that was, I think.
Oh, did you get one of those?
I did.
Oh!
That was 2005.
I didn't get a Scythe. I want one. But I never got one. Oh,
I don't think they're trainable. I think that was one of the first events that they made them non-tradable.
No, that was one of the last non-tradable events.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Huh.
Because it wasn't tradable. If it was, it would be up there with like the pumpkin and everything, right?
Yeah.
So, okay.
And the party hats and whatnot.
How about you, Mr. Bistro? Which one is your favorite?
I think I mentioned it earlier, but it was the Web of Shadows one from 2009, where you get the Eek pet spider, and it's not what you would consider a pet nowadays because it just had an emote crawled over you.
Yeah. Okay,
I
fair
remember that
enough.
one too.
I remember the pet, I don't remember the event. Do I look forward to doing holiday events more or less than I used to? Honestly, it depends. It depends on what the holiday event is and whether or not it's, a chore to do and whether it fits within the general theme of the holiday. Like, for example, I just don't feel the point of the current Easter events that really don't involve the Easter bunny or Easter related things. So when they tried that a couple years ago, I really wasn't a fan of that. But on the other hand, this past Christmas event was boring because no one went up to this glacier because it wasn't somewhere that you could easily get to. But conversely, the previous year passed. It was the same Winter Games kind of thing was in the Lumbridge Crater and everyone was there. So, I mean, it entirely depends on the event. So I think if it's easier to get to, there's more people doing it, it's a community kind of feeling, and it's not a chore to do, I'm definitely inclined to do it. So it depends based on the event for me. How about you guys?
I think that back when they first started doing the holiday events and whatnot, people were really excited about them. Like, they'd always be looking forward to what the next holiday event would be. And they'd always be something really simple. Like, I remember one of the first ones was they just dropped pumpkins everywhere and people picked up
You
pumpkins
remember
and ate
that?
them. I remember it vaguely, but
I
that
wasn't
was
there
like,
for that. And like the pumpkin is worth so much these days on the exchange.
yeah. So if you kept it, I mean, good for you, right? But
Pumpkin
I
is
mean, I wasn't.
241 million. Oh,
Yeah,
jeez.
like if you just kept it, look how much you'd have. And I remember people had the Halloween masks and everything, and they were just dropped around random, right? And they made them tradable and whatnot, and then they became all these rare things. So then they tried to shy away from just dropping items and getting you to
But let's
actually do
remember that
things.
I
But I
have a
think,
Black Santa hat.
yeah, you do.
It's worth a
But
lot.
I think that they shied away from just dropping the items, and they wanted to make it more of an actual event. And I think that's actually made the interest for holiday events go down than it was before,
Yeah, I
right?
mean, if they brought out a yearly rare that was just dropped randomly, like they did with the party hats and Santa hats and everything like that, I think that you would definitely see a spike in increase of holiday events. And I mean, I think the reason they were removed is because they put too much strain on the economy, and there were people that wanted them but couldn't afford them. And this was back in the day when everyone was growing up with RS. But now everyone who, the majority of people, or at least I think it's a majority of people who are playing, feel as though that they have grown up with this game. So we could all probably handle rare items being introduced on holiday events once again, just randomly like that. So I'd like to see that happen. Maybe they can like put in Reaper Master or something.
Just looking back, I was just reading up on the 2003 one, and they actually did a poll whether they wanted, asking players if they wanted a new Halloween event but delay the release of RuneScape 2 or keep it on schedule. And 78% of voters wanted the Halloween event. So that just goes to show you how popular it was back then,
RS2 came out in 04.
Yeah.
So
And
there you go.
they ended up putting it out on time anyways.
On time
But
and on budget.
yeah. But it just goes to show how popular these events were back then.
Yeah, we got to get back to a stage like that, I think. And
Yeah.
I think a number of things have influenced it, from JAX moving away from tradables and the community becoming more decentralized and focusing more on XP over chatting and whatnot. So, all right. Next question is from Wolfie. This is this repeating quests for more rewards has become a trend, and I was rather unhappy to see it again with this year's Halloween event. Thoughts? Also, when, if ever, have you last gone trick-or-treating, and have you ever tricked anyone for not giving out candy? Nothing more than that for this podcast. Have a spooky and scary Halloween, and that's from Wolfie. Yeah, and you know, I think we touched on that in the discussion of the update itself with the repeating of quests. You know, when you're just repeating this to get these rewards, granted it's not too tedious, but is that what you want to be doing with your time on RS? And for me, that answer is no. I don't know about you guys.
I agree. I think it's just a way for JGX to make the update seem a little bit bigger.
Yeah. Yeah. But I also want to just, you know, with this also say that because this is worded as repeating of quests, I don't see a problem with repeating quests that aren't holiday based. In this case, I am referring to the Gower quest and actual Dimension of Disaster itself. I think that those two were implemented in such great ways that they definitely do deserve repetition, and you can get something out of them different from each time you play through them. So I think for normal quests, it's okay. For holiday events, perhaps it's something we should shy away from, unless, once again, it's got that same merit to replay the event. So we'll have to wait and see what they do for Christmas. But that's where I'm at on that. How about you, Mr. Ginkala?
I think if you're going to make an event, you might want to, you got to make it worth doing. And either that means good rewards or good experience, right? So yep. I don't mean experience as in XP, but I mean the actual act of doing it, right?
Yeah, you want it to be.
You want it to be memorable.
Yeah, you want it to be fun, memorable, and stimulating.
You want people to remember doing that, right? You don't want it if it's repeating, then, or if it's a repeatable quest, it doesn't really stay in the mind very long, right?
Yeah, totally. When, if ever, have you last gone trick or treating, and have you ever tricked anyone for not giving out candy? No to the second part. I'm not a bad person.
I think I remember when I was a teenager, the last time I went trick-or-treating, I must have been like 13 or 14 or something like that.
Yeah, somewhere around and, there for me as well.
And they always said, oh, trick-or-treat. Well, how about a trick then for your candy? And they'd make you say like a dumb joke or something like that.
Oh, I thought they'd make you do like a dog trick or something.
Well, I don't know. Maybe that happened to you.
No.
But... No, they always just said, oh, tell me a funny joke. And you'd say, why did the chicken cross the road? It's because he pressed the button for the crosswalk.
That's not funny.
And then
Patrick.
They'd laugh and say, ha, 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 that's really funny, even though it's not. And then they give you a candy, and then you'd go on your way, right? My jokes have gotten better since then. Wouldn't you agree, Shane?
I don't know about that.
Well, it's a good thing. Good thing I take my own opinion on that one better then.
Ay, ay, ay. All right. How about you, Mr. Bistro?
I think last time I went trick-or-treating was when I was 12? Sometime around then. And I think I only went to a couple places in my neighborhood then. But I also did tricks for the people that would give us the candy. I never tricked them.
What kind of tricks did you do?
I don't know. Like, stand on one leg and spin or something.
Really?
Yeah. Which, now that I look back on it, I'm glad I was a kid then, because I wouldn't do that if someone begged me to now.
I should do that when people come here this year.
Good luck with
stand
that.
Stand on one leg and twist?
Yeah, or something else, you know, like, I don't know. I don't know what you can legally do anymore these days. It seems like everything has a has a limit on it, and you can get tagged for anything. So, all right. Well, thank you, Wolfie, for that question. You guys ready for tech news?
Mm-hmm. Bring on the tech news.
Okay, so before we do that, if you guys want to send the questions in, email them to questions@rsbnb.com or leave us a voicemail at our Google Voice number, which is 571-57-BNB or 571-572-2632. You can also leave us a direct message on Twitter, which is at rsbnb. All right, so I should also mention that each week the topic is updated, where if you have an RSBN form account, you can post there at update.rsbnb.com/ask. So tech news, a very, very busy week in tech news. I had no idea this was going to be the tech news week of the year for things for us to talk about here on this podcast. So
I don't think I've ever seen five different topics before. I've seen three, I've seen four, but never five.
Yeah. So last Friday, there was a huge denial of service attack on the internet. And that basically
means huge.
Very large, yes. This basically means that there is a malicious actor out there somewhere that was aiming to knock certain devices or services off of the internet. As estimated right now, many, many websites were hit by this. RuneScape was hit by this. Spotify, Reddit, Slack,
Twitter.
GitHub, Twitter. Lots of websites. Pretty much if you can think of any popular website, there was some kind of issue with it. And my first realization that something was going wrong with this was seeing that our scripts to update the prices in our Grand Exchange database were failing because the RuneScape website was unreachable. So basically what happened is that this was a distributed denial of service attack, meaning that it wasn't just one malicious actor knocking this service offline. It was many thousands of devices knocking this service offline. And since the attack, it has been revealed that it was a botnet of Internet of Things devices that were infected with a well-known piece of malware. So this Internet of Things phenomenon that everyone is jumping onto, from, you know, refrigerators that are on the internet, doorbells that are on the internet, thermostats that are on the internet, practically anything you can think of that is not a PC or a tablet or a phone that can go on the internet could potentially have been victim to this malware. And it was these infected devices with this malware that were performing the denial of service attack by issuing fraudulent DNS requests to a big DNS server on the internet. And to explain what that means, that basically means that when you put in a web address into Google or into your web browser, like google.com, for example, there's a service that looks up google.com and translates it to a numerical internet address that called the IP address, and that is what facilitates the connection between you and Google. So it was this lookup service that transfers the name google.com, runescape.com to numerical addresses that was attacked, and that's what was preventing everyone from using these huge services on the internet. So it's really quite shocking that something of this magnitude was able to happen, because huge swaths of the internet were down on Friday because of this. And no one ever thought something like this could happen. But it happened through, you know, simple vulnerabilities in Internet of Things devices, which, when you think about it, is something that people aren't thinking about, the security of Internet Things devices. So that's going to be a discussion going forward for Internet of Things manufacturers, as well as security experts and router manufacturers and everything like that, who can try and figure out how to secure these pieces of hardware out there. But it's unknown as to who initiated the attack still. The prevailing theory is that it could just be script kiddies, people who, you know, find an exploit on the internet and think it looks neat to play with. And because this was such a tempting target, was able to make things happen with it. So we'll keep watching and see if there's someone actually charged for this or if the actual perpetrator is revealed. But in cases of distributed denial of service attacks, it is often pretty hard to find who the actual perpetrator was. So, I mean, this is not something that was supposed to happen, and it says volumes for how the internet is structured, and people need to fix this going forward, from the DNS providers to the Internet of Things providers. So lots of security fortification happening this week.
Yeah, I remember sitting at my desk and hearing IT starting to go off about all these things going down throughout the day. And I mean, we were still seeing ramifications to that on our end for a couple of days with Google and all of the services that they do for any e-commerce site.
Yeah, and I mean, just the fact that something like this was able to happen should send alarm bells through the industry, because without DNS, as you guys saw, the domain name system which was attacked, without DNS, the internet becomes nothing to normal people, which is mm-hmm. really worrying. So it's worrying, but at the same time, it's kind of humbling to show how simple the internet actually is built, and the fact it's been able to go on for what, 20 odd years now since, you know, the World Wide Web came about using this technology, and there really haven't been any major breakdowns like this. So,
mm-hmm.
And just to give people an idea of how much bandwidth was in use for this attack, the standard residential connection, you know, you can normally expect maybe 30 to 50 megabits downstream and 5 to 10 megabits upstream available. I know some of us in this Skype call have significantly less, but that is what the residential internet connections are able to serve. Most server farms and places that have good internet connections that serve the internet will cripple at around 10 gigabits per second or maybe 100 gigabits per second if they're really well fortified. But this attack was a lot larger than either of those. 665 gigabits per second.
Oh.
Yeah. So, yeah, that is what we're up against going forward in terms of cybersecurity. So we'll just leave the listeners with that and say if you guys have any Internet of Things devices, definitely contact the manufacturer and ensure that they are patched to prevent them from being taken over with this malware. If you can patch them, some of them you can't. All right, shall we move on to happier things?
Sure.
Microsoft announced this week the Surface Studio, their all-in-one PC with a 28-inch display. And believe it or not, this is actually marketed at creative individuals and the workplace. So the Surface Studio is a PC that's an all-in-one, kind of like Apple's iMac, except rather than using it straight up, it has a hinge that allows you to place it almost horizontal so it can be used as an artist's drawing board, for example. It also has, you know, a touch that we have seen in all the other Surface-based technology, the Surface Book, the Microsoft Surface itself. So as you can see, this is Microsoft's answer to the way touch is going in the future. Some system specs on it comes with, you know, the standard Intel processors with up to 32 gigs of RAM and NVIDIA GeForce graphics. It also has peripherals that you can use with it, stylus, as you already have with the standard Microsoft Surface, but also a new creative puck. And this puck is called the Surface Dial. You can put it on a screen, and it effectively acts as another interaction device, as if it's basically a modern mouse. So you put it on your screen, and then let's say you're in Photoshop, it will act as a color selector, for example. Or if you're in a Maps application, it can be used to interact with the map. Basically, it's a way of enhancing the touch interface without needing to, I guess, touch the screen, because it is an actual device that you move across the screen. I'm honestly not sure what I think about the Puck, but I mean, everyone's going to have their own form factor, and we'll see if this manages to continue on through the next generation of this product.
It sounds pretty specific, but I guess with time, more stuff might become viable.
Yeah, like it looks really catered towards the artistic community, because like the main applications that they show are one called Sketchable, which is a way of basically drawing on your Windows PC. Another one is Mental Canvas, which looks like a, I guess, almost a drafting application or a high-level 3D space mapping application. There's also Drawboard, which is for blueprints. Moho 12, which I guess is cartoon animation from the looks of it. Staff Pad for music. And Bluebeam Revo, which is another drafting application. So you can also see where Microsoft is aiming this product at. It's at the creative professional, or maybe even the 3D artist. So, of course, it also supports things like Word, Excel, PowerPoint, and so on. So this is $29.99, and it's an all-in-one PC from Microsoft. I guess you would buy this if you're really invested in Windows 10 and your application you use supports this. You know, it's a shame that they didn't bring something in on the consumer side here. But, I mean, I don't see a consumer buying this. Do you guys see a consumer buying this PC?
It's a pretty hefty price tag
for a Windows PC. Yeah.
Yeah, like $3,000, starting at $3,000 basically is quite a bit of money for what you're getting.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also think that they are not going to, or they're shooting for the wrong market, because anyone worth their salt seems to be on the Mac side of things at the moment.
Yeah, this definitely dig into the Mac creative professional audience, I think. Mm-hmm. And, you know, part of that is that the Mac Pro hasn't been updated in, I think, 2.5 years at this point. So, but anyways, this week also Microsoft also released the Surface Book i7, which is an updated version of their hybrid laptop and Surface, if you want to go that route rather than getting just the traditional Surface. So I guess that's the option for the end consumer rather than the professional user. All right. You guys ready for the really happy news then?
Must be Apple related, yes?
That's right. That's right. Today, Apple announced an updated series of MacBook Pros. So, I just want to get your guys' opinion on these before I say why they're so groundbreaking. So, do you guys have any thoughts on these, or should I just jump right in?
The page looks really nice.
Yeah, it does, doesn't
it? Design on it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So basically, the MacBook Pros were updated today with new processors and, you know, the standard update that we expect from Apple on a yearly basis. But what they also did is they took it one step further and brought out a new 13-inch and 15-inch model with a touch bar that effectively replaces your function keys on the computer. Now, you're saying, okay, I don't use my function keys daily, but how is this going to work? Well, here's what it does. It is a LED touch bar that supports multi-touch, and it is contextually aware, so that based on which application you're running in, that touch bar will update for the current task that you're performing. So if you're just on your desktop, it'll have standard controls like volume controls, maybe your Spotify controls, maybe an escape button, for example. But if you jump into something like Keynote, which is Apple's PowerPoint replacement, it will offer you autocorrect suggestions and QuickType suggestions when you're typing. But if you decide you need to, for example, change your font color, it will allow you to have a slider and change the font color of your font without needing to open a menu. So this will be a tool that's right available on your keyboard. So effectively what this is doing is it's extending the hardware as a way of, or rather it's creating a new interface with hardware that would typically be done with software, which is the direction that Apple is going with this. And that is the symbolic nature of this release, is that it shows that there is a huge link between hardware and software on the Mac. And when you buy a Mac, you're not only getting great hardware, but you're getting great hardware and software integration. And of course, this will be customizable for third-party applications. You can also drag and drop to it, which is really interesting. So it's effectively creating a multimodal interface for your computer, which basically means that not only do you have your keyboard to type on, you have your trackpad to move the mouse, but you also have this touch interface directly built into the keyboard that changes contextually, which is ultimately going to be the future for interaction on modern PCs, I think. So Apple is really ahead of the curve on this, where everyone else is at. And a huge benefit for this is it also supports Apple's fingerprint technology, Touch ID, that lets people log into their Macs with Touch ID now and use Apple Pay. So huge innovation going forward with this.
I think it's worth noting that they have a 13-inch option that doesn't have the touch bar or Touch ID.
Yes, that's right. And, you know, that's the entry-level model. And I would suggest, and I think this is logical, that in the next probably year and a half to 2 years, we'll see the touch bar come to all of the Macs, which is typically what Apple does. That's how the Force Touch trackpad started, and it's in everything now. So this touch bar will likely make its way through all the products eventually. Also, with this product, a huge new trackpad takes up a third of the keyboard space below the keyboard. So it really says touch is the future for our product. And they also moved to USB-C, which is a new emerging standard. So all in all, moving the Mac line forward and really cementing Apple's place as a technology innovator. So, yeah. You guys have any USB-C devices?
No.
I don't think I do.
Yeah, they're pretty new. Last year or so, I think mainly in the smartphone market, if I had to guess. So, yeah. But really interesting technology going on here, and it signals the future of technological development.
It's interesting how it's interesting how it supports up to two 5K displays. 5K.
Yeah, I mean that's what they're able to do with the graphics card, and that just comes through the standard USB-C, which is also capable of being used for Thunderbolt as well. So I think this is the future that Apple's been wanting to get to, with one cable, one port kind of solution. So, pretty great.
And I think with all of the features they're putting in, I was looking at the prices there, and they start at about $1,500 for the base 13-inch model, and then they go all the way up to $2,800 for the higher-end 15-inch one. But the specs themselves of are pretty good for laptops. Oh, yeah.
And you know the thing is, this is the same price that the MacBook Pros were at yesterday. So it's not as though we're paying more for this. It's just you pay and you get the same thing as you, or you get more than you would have got yesterday. So Apple's not charging us more for this technology, which is a great thing to do.
Yeah, they're just upgrading it, basically.
Exactly. For those of you guys who want to watch more, I'd suggest you head on over to the website and watch the design video about that and look more into the specific touch bar. So if you're in the market for a new laptop, now's the time. All right. So any of you guys use Vine?
No.
I am not in the target market.
unless you watch counting compiled Vine videos all into one massive YouTube crap. Yeah, watch some of those.
All right. Well, Vine was the video loop website that Twitter eventually ended up purchasing. And today, Twitter and Vine announced that in the coming months, they will be discontinuing the mobile app for Vine. They are not removing the website, the apps, or any of the Vines today. They are going to be, quote, doing this in the right way. You'll be able to access and download all your Vines, and the website will be kept online because I think it's important to be able to watch all the incredible Vines that you have made. So effectively, this is warning that, okay, so if you're about to jump on the Vine platform, well, we're going to discontinue it in a few months. And, you know, this really isn't surprising because Twitter has its own support for video now. There's this thing called Snapchat that so many people use. Instagram also exists, who has happened to be owned by Facebook, and Facebook also has video calling, apparently. So, Vine seems certainly redundant in the market as it is today, and with Twitter's tanking share values and their future in jeopardy, it makes sense as to why they're cutting off dead weight in this case. So, that's just happening with Vine, and you know, it's always a worrying thing when you see a major web service like Vine say they're going to be shutting down, because that certainly signals problems for Twitter as a whole as the parent company. So we'll have to see where this goes, but if you're a Vine user, be warned that in the next few months they are going to be slowly ramping down the service. So any further thoughts on this aside from the fact that we're not all in the target audience of Vine here?
I think it's kind of surprising, to be honest. You wouldn't think about something this big just shutting down all of a sudden.
Yeah, well, it's not all of a sudden. It's going to be it's going to happen slowly but surely over the next series of months.
Well, yeah, but I mean, just the news coming out about it, you know, it's kind of surprising, you know?
Yeah, it is.
Especially something that really didn't start like that long ago. Like, what did it say, 2013 or something like that?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's only 3 years for something that big to grow that big in just three years, and then to shut it down is that to me is kind of surprising, you know?
Yeah, I think that Twitter got Vine just so they could get access to all their stuff and use it for what they needed, and now they're tossing away the scraps, cutting the fat.
Yeah, they could be doing that because it also happened to come out today that Twitter let go several hundred of their staff. So it's not only a thinning at Vine, it's a thinning at Twitter. And I mean, when you look at what Vine offers, and you can already do that on Twitter, it kind of makes sense that it's just something that's going to happen, right?
Yeah, maybe they're just trying to integrate the technology for videos with Twitter than have it on Vine.
Yeah, and that practically already exists, though it's a bit different. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that we'll have to just wait and see what happens for Twitter going forward. But, you know, based on the share price, this doesn't surprise me at all. So,
mm-hmm.
Anyways, anything else on this one?
No, I don't think so.
Good.
Okay. Well, I had promised that we were done with the Note 7. I had promised that. But I was sent, and I'm just allowing listener and podcast collaboration here. I was sent a great image this afternoon by Parnassius, listener of the podcast. It's a little cartoon, kind of relating to the Note 7, although not out there. It's a boardroom meeting depiction where they are saying, "I know sales of our new phone are good, but let's not say that sales are exploding."
It's good.
So you can see this image in the show notes and enjoy it, because unless you guys bring it up, we are done with the Note 7.
Unless you have a burning desire for Note 7 explosions, right?
Oh, that's pretty funny.
See, I told you they got better over the years.
You're right. They have. All right. Well, that's it for tech news then. Thank you, Parnassius, for sending that great image in. You managed to let me bring the Note 7 into another podcast after all.
Yes, thank you, Parnassius.
And on another note...
It's Skill of the Month time, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. It is.
Duke Juker, first place, 32.3 million experience gained in fire making this month. Safe to say he's got a runaway here. Second place is Flash with 15.1 million experience gained. And third place, Parnassius with 8.3 million XP gained. Duke Juker has managed to maintain a linear trajectory for practically all of this month except for at the beginning, which is really quite astounding. And 32 million XP in a month. That means that... Well, that means...
That means wow.
Yeah, as you can tell by my speechlessness, that basically means that in 6 or 7 months you can get 200 million fire-making experience.
Maybe he's the one for... Maybe he's the reason why all the Note 7s are catching fire. Fires all the month.
Anyways, well, it's safe to say he's got this one in the bag. If you guys are listening before November 1st, the November skill of the month is agility. If you're interested in competing in that, all you need is an RSBNB form account. Then you can sign up at rsbnb.com/skotm. Should be interesting to see what you guys do with agility.
Yeah, you have to sign up quickly before the beginning of the month for agility, right?
Okay. That one was not funny. But you going to take part, Mr. Bistro?
I think I will.
Oh, good.
I can't leave any promises there, but I'll try.
Yeah, it's been a while since I've had a podcast co-host do a Skill of the Month.
I love doing Skill of the Month.
Yeah, so, I mean, it'd be great if you did this.
There we go. Signed up right now.
Right on. Sounds good.
Oh, be careful. You don't want to rush into the decision, though.
Oh, you're right. You're right. Oh, I regret. No, I'm kidding.
Okay. Maybe you were just a bit too fast.
Okay.
I'm slowly killing Shane's will to live.
That's right. Achievements of the week. We got two of them this week. First up is Malorna, who got 99 mining on October 23rd. Congratulations to you. And Magic King got 99 fishing on the 22nd. Congratulations also. Two interesting skills to see. I remember back in the olden days when every skill on here was either cooking or fletching. I'm glad that we've reached the point of diversity among skills. So, good job to both of you. Congrats.
Mm-hmm.
Alrighty, does anyone have a pick of the week this week? I know you went last week, Mr. Bistro, so I'm not sure if you do.
No, I don't, fortunately.
How about you, King Kala?
You did mention that to me, actually, or I would have thought of one, but we could just go with something that's sitting right in front of me, what's the new headset that came today, the Turtle Beach Air Force PX21. So if you have been listening to me and say, hey, he sounds much better than he did a couple months ago, whenever he was last on, then that would be why. New headset.
Yeah, we like the PX21. It's a good headset if you can find it.
Are we all running PX21s here?
I'm not. Are you? I thought you were running PX22.
Oh yeah, I'm running it.
Yeah, you're running the modern version of it. The PX21 is the older version. They're supposedly interchangeable. I can hear a bit of a sound quality difference between the 21 and the 22. But they're both good gaming headsets. For a long time was the recommended headset for those wanting to come on the show. So that says a lot, and I'm glad you use this as a pick of the week. I think the best place to find these are on Amazon because they are a legacy product. But I think you can get them for around $49 US, but we did need to pay more to get yours into Canada, I believe.
Yeah, it was a little bit more than that. It was closer to, I think it was around 80 or 90 Canadian.
Yeah. But
clutch shipping and whatnot.
Let's see. Amazon.com Turtle Beach PX21. We'll stay on Amazon.com and see what that's going for. let's see. Yeah, $44 on Amazon.com via Amazon Prime. So I guess if you're in the U.S., then this would be a great headset to purchase. It's the same one that Earth used when he did the podcast. So it is a definite favorite around here. You can also get Mr. Bistro's PX22, which is a few dollars more. You know, I can hear the sound difference between them, but I think to most people it will be indistinguishable. So, all right. Thank you for throwing that pick of the weekend like that. I did not expect that.
I just came with up with it in 20 seconds, I swear. Normally, I'm not that fast on the draw.
All right. Well, let's move on to other things then. What have you been up to this week, Mr. Bistro?
The Halloween event and a little bit of fishing.
Okay, Fishvention?
That's about it. Fishvention.
Yeah. What's your invention level currently?
And same as always.
What do you mean?
I'm actually stocking up my Rod-O-Matics now.
Oh?
I would like to drop them all at once.
Okay, that's interesting. So yeah. You can basically get a huge burst of XP.
Yeah.
Okay. And what level invention are you right now?
I am 96.
Okay, so you're going to go straight to 99 or 120?
I think I'll let myself get 97, and then from then I'll get 99, probably take a break and do some other stuff in the game, because it's starting to give me a little bit of burnout, so I could definitely do with some bossing or some other kind of skills for a while.
Okie dokie.
Not sure what yet.
Farming.
Farming can only take you so far. You got to do something in between that.
You can make lots of money from it, though.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I know.
Good. Good. All right. So what you been up to, King Kala?
I'm not sure when the last time I was on, to be honest. I'm not sure how recent quarter to one. Go, but quarter one. My goodness. Okay. I quit my job back in May, so I've been back to school September. I've been trying to finish up my political science degree, and that's currently going well, slowly but surely.
Haven't had to punch anyone yet?
No, I've not had to punch anyone yet, though I do sometimes get the urge when I go to drive into the parking spots, because probably the worst parkers on the earth are probably college students, because they don't really have that much experience with it yet in, you know, coloring between the lines, shall we say. But other than that, it's been going pretty good.
All right.
Yeah. And other than that, just the games I've been playing, been a bit of Overwatch, a bit of World of Tanks here and there. And then I've also been playing a lot of older games like Medieval Total War and the new Deus Ex and whatnot. So all of them are good.
Alrighty.
I've been playing the original Roller Coaster Tycoon recently.
Like the one from the 1990s?
Yeah, it's so funny because you save the game and it like exits the game and opens up your Explorer window to save. It's awesome.
That still works on Windows 10?
Yeah.
Wow.
Granted, it does mess with your graphic settings.
Does it go down to 16 colors or something?
No, it doesn't go down to 16 colors, but it it just explodes your screen. It just magnifies everything.
Like, it's probably going down to like 800 by 600 or 640 by 480 then.
Yeah.
Wow.
I've got a few of those kinds of games that I do that go down to that resolution. And they still work. They're, Windows is actually fairly good for backwards compatibility.
Yeah, of course it is. It's the same kernel since practically XP, or Vista, rather.
Yeah.
So.
For now,
right. All right. Uh-huh. Well, as for me this week on RS, I have been continuing my mining endeavor in an attempt to get level 97 mining so I can mine the golden salts on the Ark. This week, with the help of the friends chat, our friends chat, Bits Bytes if anyone wants to join it or needs somewhere to chat while they're playing game. Lots of good people always in there. But with the help of that chat, I managed to find Squick the Castaway, which is a castaway that comes about only once a week at a various part in the arc. And it's basically a little octopus that you talk to after visiting the island. So that's one of the harder castaways to find, so there should be no problem finding all the other castaways at some point in the arc. You know, it's amazing how the arc has changed my agenda, or I guess you could say it set my character on a whole new arc, right?
Oh, God.
You guys think my jokes are bad?
Oh. I'm allowed one per day, right?
One per day. Now back to your cage.
But, yeah, I mean, initially before that, all I was doing was looking at ways of bringing money in to train Herblore, but I've kind of abandoned that since Arc Part 2 came out, because I wanted to, you know, just have the ability to get chimes on the Arc and get some of the unlocks done, and Shark Soup is, of course, the best way, and the easiest way to do that now is through Divination and Golden Salt. So, yeah, that's led to 97 mining. But aside from that, that's about it on RS. So is there anything else before we go this week?
I don't think so.
Okay, then.
That's it.
Well, thank you for listening, everyone. Hopefully this episode of the podcast has been enjoyable to you. For King Kulla, a.k.a. Patrick, thank you for coming on the show and providing your usual services.
Always a pleasure.
And of course, Mr. Bistro and I will be back next week to discuss the first update of November, which will not be Bounty Hunter. That'll be in roughly 3 weeks' time on the week of November 14th. So with that being said, we'll see you next week, and thank you for sharing your time with us.
Goodbye, everyone.
Bye.